Anyhow, I haven't seen her in several months at least, but I doubt much about her has changed.
Like a hummingbird? Says Kenji.
So is she like a fast talker?
No, says Warner.
She's usually very quiet.
Okay, well, I'm glad she's not here, Kenji says.
Sounds boring.
Warner almost smiles.
She would disembowel you.
Kenji rolls his eyes, and I'm just about to ask another question when a sudden, harsh ring interrupts the conversation. De La Liu has come to collect us for dinner.
Warner. I genuinely dislike being hugged. There are very few exceptions to this rule, and Hader is not one of them. Even so, every time I see him, he insists on hugging me. He kisses the air on either side of my face, clamps his hands around my shoulders, and smiles at me like I am actually his friend.
Ela Habibi Shlonak, it's so good to see you.
I attempt to smile.
Anizen, shukran.
I nod at the table. Please, have a seat.
Sure, sure,
he says and looks around.
Wenha Nazira.
Oh, I say, surprised. I thought you came alone.
La Habibi, he says as he sits down. Yeshua mitakira. But she should be here any minute now. She was very excited to see you.
I highly doubt that.
I'm sorry, but am I the only one here who didn't know you speak Arabic?
Kenji is staring at me wide-eyed. Hader laughs, eyes bright as he analyzes my face.
Your new friends know so little about you.
And then to Kenji.
Your Regent Warner speaks 7 languages.
You speak 7 languages? Juliet says, touching my arm. Sometimes, I say quietly. It's a small group of us for dinner tonight. Juliet is sitting at the head of the table. I'm seated to her right. Kenji sits to the right of me. Across from me now sits Hader Ibrahim. Across from Kenji is an empty chair.
So, says Hader, clapping his hands together, this is your new life? So much has changed since I saw you last.
I pick up my fork.
What are you doing here, Hader?
Voila, he says, clutching his chest.
I thought you'd be happy to see me. I wanted to meet all your new friends. And of course, I had to meet your new supreme commander.
He appraises Juliet out of the corner of his eye. The movement is so quick I almost miss it. And then he picks up his napkin, drapes it carefully across his lap, and says, very softly,
Ye chitan halwa.
My chest tightens.
And is that enough for you?
He leans forward suddenly, speaking so quietly only I can hear him.
A pretty face? And you so easily betray your friends?
If you've come here to fight, I say, please, let's not bother eating dinner. Hader laughs out loud, picks up his water glass.
Not yet, Habibi.
He takes a drink, sits back. There's always time for dinner.
Where is your sister?
I say, turning away. Why didn't you arrive together?
Why don't you ask her yourself?
I look up, surprised to find Nazira standing at the door. She studies the room, her eyes lingering on Juliet's face just a second longer than everyone else's, and takes her seat without a word.
Everyone, this is Nazira,
Hader says, jumping to his feet with a wide smile. He wraps an arm around his sister's shoulder, even as she ignores him.
She'll be here for the duration of my stay. I hope you will welcome her as warmly as you've welcomed me.
Nazira does not say hello. Hader's face is open, an exaggeration of happiness. Nazira, however, wears no expression at all. Her eyes are blank, her jaw solemn. The only similarities in these siblings are physical. She bears a remarkable resemblance to her brother. She has his warm brown skin, his light brown eyes, and the same long dark eyelashes that shut her expression from the rest of us. but she's grown up quite a bit since I last saw her. Her eyes are bigger, deeper than Hader's, and she has a small diamond piercing centered just underneath her bottom lip. Two more diamonds above her right eyebrow. The only other marked distinction between them is that I cannot see her hair. She wears a silk shawl around her head. And I can't help but be quietly shocked. This is new. The Nazira I remember did not cover her hair. And why would she? Her headscarf is a relic, a part of our past life. It's an artifact of a religion and culture that no longer exists under the re-establishment. Our movement long ago expunged all symbols and practices of faith or culture in an effort at resetting identities and allegiances. So much so that places of worship were among the first institutions around the world to be destroyed. Civilians, it was said, were to bow before the re-establishment and nothing else. Crosses, crescents, stars of David, turbans and yarmulkes, headscarves and nuns' habits. They're all illegal. And Nazira Ibrahim, the daughter of a supreme commander, has a staggering amount of nerve, because this simple scarf, an otherwise insubstantial detail, is nothing less than an open act of rebellion. And I'm so stunned, I almost can't help what I say next. You cover your hair now. At this, she looks up, meets my eyes. She takes a long sip of her tea and studies me. And then, finally, says nothing. I feel my face about to register surprise, and I have to force myself to be still. Clearly, she has no interest in discussing the subject. I decide to move on. I'm about to say something to Hader when... So you don't think anyone will notice that you cover your hair? It's Kenji, speaking and chewing at the same time. I touch my fingers to my lips and look away, fighting to hide my revulsion. Nazira stabs at a piece of lettuce on her plate. Eats it. I mean, you have to know, Kenji says to her, still chewing, that what you're wearing is an offense punishable by imprisonment. She seems surprised to find Kenji still pursuing the subject, her eyes appraising him like he might be an idiot. I'm sorry, she says softly, putting down her fork. But who are you exactly?
Nazira, Hader says, trying to smile as he shoots her a careful sidelong glance. Please remember that we are guests.
I didn't realize there was a dress code here.
Oh! Well, I guess we don't have a dress code here, Kenji says between bites, oblivious to the tension. But that's only because we have a new supreme commander who's not a psychopath. But it's illegal to dress like that, he says, gesturing at her face with his spoon. Like, literally, everywhere else, right? He looks around, but no one responds. Isn't it? He says to me, eager for confirmation. I nod, slowly. Nazira takes another long drink of her tea, careful to replace the cup in its saucer before she leans back, looks us both in the eye, and says,
What makes you think I care?
I mean, Kenji frowns. Don't you have to care? Your dad is a supreme commander. Does he even know that you wear that thing? Another abstract gesture at her head. In public? Won't he be pissed?
This is not going well.
Nazira, who'd just picked up her fork again to spear some bit of food on her plate, puts down her fork and sighs. Unlike her brother, she speaks perfectly unaccented English. She's looking only at Kenji when she says,
This thing?
Sorry, he says sheepishly. I don't know what it's called. She smiles at him, but there's no warmth in it, only a warning.
Men, she says, are always so baffled by women's clothing. So many opinions about a body that does not belong to them. Cover up, don't cover up.
She waves a hand.
No one can seem to decide.
But that's not what I... Kenji tries to say.
You know what I think? She says, still smiling. About someone telling me what's legal and illegal about the way I dress?
She holds up two middle fingers. Kenji chokes.
Go ahead, she says, her eyes flashing angrily as she picks up her fork again. Tell my dad. Alert the armies. I don't give a shit.
Nazira!
Shut up, hater.
Whoa, hey, I'm sorry, Kenji says suddenly, looking panicked. I didn't mean...
Whatever, she says, rolling her eyes. I'm not hungry.
She stands up suddenly, elegantly. There's something interesting about her anger, her unsubtle protest, and she's more impressive standing up. She has the same long legs and lean frame as her brother, and she carries herself with great pride, like someone who was born into position and privilege. She wears a gray tunic cut from fine, heavy fabric, skin-tight leather pants, heavy boots, and a set of glittering gold knuckles on both hands. And I'm not the only one staring. Juliet, who's been watching quietly this whole time, is looking up, amazed. I can practically see her thought process as she suddenly stiffens, glances down at her own outfit, and crosses her arms over her chest as if to hide her pink sweater from view. She's tugging at her sleeves as though she might tear them off. It's so adorable, I almost kiss her right then. A heavy, uncomfortable silence settles between us after Nazira's gone. We'd all been expecting an in-depth interrogation from Hader tonight. Instead, he pokes quietly at his food, looking tired and embarrassed. No amount of money or prestige can save any of us from the agony of awkward family dinners.
Why'd you have to say anything?
Kenji elbows me, and I flinch, surprised. Excuse me?
This is your fault,
he hisses, low and anxious.
You shouldn't have said anything about her scarf.
I asked one question, I say stiffly. You're the one who kept pushing.
Yeah, but you started it. Why do you even have to say anything?
She's the daughter of a supreme commander, I say, fighting to keep my voice down. She knows better than anyone else that what she's wearing is illegal under the laws of the reestablishment.
Oh, my God, Kenji says, shaking his head. Just stop, okay? How dare you? What are you two whispering about?
Juliet says, leaning in.
Just that your boyfriend doesn't know when to shut his mouth,
Kenji says, scooping up another spoonful of food.
You're the one who can't keep his mouth shut.
I turn away. You can't even manage it while you're eating a bite of food. All the disgusting things.
Shut up, man. I'm hungry.
I think I'll retire for the evening also, Hader says suddenly. He stands. We all look up. Of course, I say. I get to my feet to bid him a proper good night.
Anasif,
Hader says, looking down at his half-eaten dinner. I was hoping to have a more productive conversation with all of you this evening. But I'm afraid my sister is unhappy to be here. She didn't want to leave home. He sighs. But you know Baba, he says to me. He gave her no choice. Hader shrugs, attempts a smile. She doesn't understand yet that what we do, the way we live now. He hesitates. It's the life we are given. None of us has a choice. And for the first time tonight, he surprises me. I see something in his eyes I recognize. A flicker of pain. The weight of responsibility. Expectation. I know too well what it is to be the son of a supreme commander of the reestablishment, and dare to disagree. Of course, I say to him. I understand. I really do.
Juliet. Warner escorts Hader back to his residence, and soon after they're gone, the rest of our party breaks apart. It was a weird, too short dinner with a lot of surprises, and my head hurts. I'm ready for bed. Kenji and I are making our way to Warner's room in silence, both of us lost in thought. It's Kenji who speaks first.
So, you were pretty quiet tonight, he says.
Yeah. I laugh, but there's no life in it. I'm exhausted, Kenji. It was a weird day, an even weirder night.
Weird how?
I don't know. How about we start with the fact that Warner speaks 7 languages? I look up, meet his eyes. I mean, what the hell? Sometimes I think I know him so well, and then something like this happens, and it just... I shake my head. Blows my mind. You were right, I say. I still know nothing about him. Plus, what am I even doing anymore? I didn't say anything at dinner because I have no idea what to say. Kenji blows out a breath.
Yeah, well, 7 languages is pretty crazy. But, I mean, you have to remember that he was born into this, you know? Warner's had schooling you've never had.
That's exactly my point.
Hey, you'll be okay,
Kenji says, squeezing my shoulder.
It's going to be okay.
I was just starting to feel like maybe I could do this, I say to him. I just had this whole talk with Warner today that actually made me feel better, and now I can't even remember why. I sigh, close my eyes. I feel so stupid, Kenji. Every day I feel stupider.
Maybe you're just getting old, senile.
He taps his head.
You know?
Shut up.
So,
he laughs.
I know it was a weird night and everything, but what'd you think, overall?
Of what? I glance at him.
Of Hader and Nazira, he says. Thoughts, feelings, sociopaths, yes or no?
Oh, I frown. I mean, they're so different from each other. Hader is so loud and Nazira is... I don't know. I've never met anyone like her before. I guess I respect that she's standing up to her dad in the reestablishment, but I have no idea what her real motivations are, so I'm not sure I should give her too much credit. I sigh. Anyway, she seems really angry. And really beautiful, and really intimidating. The painful truth is that I'd never felt so intimidated by another girl before, and I don't know how to admit that out loud. All day, and for the last couple of weeks, I felt like an imposter. A child. I hate how easily I fade in and out of confidence. How I waver between who I was and who I could be. My past still clings to me, skeleton hands holding me back even as I push forward into the light. And I can't help but wonder how different I'd be today if I'd ever had someone to encourage me when I was growing up. I never had strong female role models. Meeting Nazira tonight, seeing how tall and brave she was, made me wonder where she learned to be that way. It made me wish I had a sister, or a mother, someone to learn from and lean on, a woman to teach me how to be brave in this body, among these men. I've never had that. Instead, I was raised on a steady diet of taunts and jeers, jabs at my heart, slaps in the face, told repeatedly I was worthless, a monster. Never loved, never protected from the world. Nazira doesn't seem to care at all what other people think, and I wish so much that I had her confidence. I know I've changed a lot, that I've come a long way from who I used to be, but I want more than anything to just be confident and unapologetic about who I am and how I feel, and not have to try so hard all the time. Still working on that part of myself.
Right, Kenji is saying. Yeah, pretty angry, but...
Excuse me? At the sound of her voice, we both spin around.
Speak of the devil, Kenji says under his breath. I'm sorry, I think I'm lost,
Nazira says.
I thought I knew this building pretty well, but there's a bunch of construction going on and it's throwing me off.
Can either of you tell me how to get outside? She almost smiles. Oh, sure, I say, and almost smile back. Actually, I pause, I think you might be on the wrong side of the building. Do you remember which entrance you came in from? She stops to think.
I think we're staying on the south side, she says, and flashes me a full, real smile for the first time, then falters. Wait, I think it was the south side.
I'm sorry, she says, frowning. I just arrived a couple of hours ago. Hader got here before me. I totally understand, I say, cutting her off with a wave. Don't worry. It took me a while to navigate the construction, too. Actually, you know what? Kenji knows his way around even better than I do. This is Kenji, by the way. I don't think you guys were formally introduced tonight. Yeah, hi, she says, her smile gone in an instant. I remember. Kenji is staring at her like an idiot. Eyes wide, blinking, lips parted ever so slightly. I poke his arm and he yelps, startled, but comes back to life. Oh, right, he says quickly. Hi, sorry about dinner. She raises an eyebrow at him. And for the first time in all the time I've known him, Kenji actually blushes. Blushes. No, really, he says. I think your scarf is, really cool. Uh-huh. What's it made of? He says, reaching forward to touch her head. It looks so soft. She slaps his hand away, recoiling visibly even in this dim light. What the hell? Are you serious right now? What? Kenji blinks, confused. What'd I do? Nazira laughs, her expression a mixture of confusion and vague disgust. How are you so bad at this? Kenji freezes in place, his mouth agape. I just don't know, like, what the rules are. Like, can I call you sometime, or... I laugh suddenly, loud and awkward, and pinch Kenji in the arm. Kenji swears out loud, shoots me an angry look. I plant a bright smile on my face and speak only to Nazira. So, yeah, if you want to get to the south exit, I say quickly, your best bet is to go back down the hall and make three lefts. You'll see the double doors on your right. Just ask one of the soldiers to take you from there. Thanks, Nazira says, returning my smile before shooting a weird look in Kenji's direction. He's still massaging his injured shoulder as he waves her a weak goodbye. It's only after she's gone again that I finally spin around, hiss, "What the hell is wrong with you?" And Kenji grabs my arm, goes weak in the knees and says, "Oh my God, Jay, I think I'm in love." I ignore him. "No, seriously," he says. "Like, is this what that is? Because I've never been in love before, so I don't know if this is love or if I just have, like, food poisoning." "You don't even know her," I say, rolling my eyes. "So I'm guessing it's probably food poisoning." "You think so?" I glance up at him, eyes narrowed, but one look is all it takes to lose my thread of anger. His expression is so weird and silly, so slap-happy, I almost feel bad for him. I sigh, shoving him forward. He keeps stopping in place for no reason. "I don't know. I think maybe you're just, you know, attracted to her." "God, Kenji, you gave me so much crap for acting like this over Adam and Warner, and now here you are, being all hormonal. Whatever. You owe me." I frown at him. He shrugs, still beaming. "I mean, I know she's probably a sociopath, and, like, would definitely murder me in my sleep, but damn, she's... Wow," he says. "She's, like, batshit pretty. The kind of pretty that makes a man think getting murdered in his sleep might not be a bad way to go." "Yeah," I say, but I say it quietly. "Right? I guess." "What do you mean, you guess? I wasn't asking a question. That girl is objectively beautiful." "Sure." Kenji stops, takes my shoulders in his hands. "What is your deal, Jay? I don't know what you're..." "Oh my God," he says, stunned. "Are you jealous?" "No," I say, but I practically yell the word at him. He's laughing now. "That's crazy. Why are you jealous?" I shrug, mumble something. "Wait, what's that?" He cups his hand over his ear. "You're worried I'm going to leave you for another woman?" "Shut up, Kenji. I'm not jealous." "Aw, Jay, I'm not. I swear I'm not jealous. I'm having a hard time." But I never have a chance to say the words. Kenji suddenly picks me up, spins me around, and says, "Aw, you're so cute when you're jealous." And I kick him in the knee, hard. He drops me to the floor, grabs his leg, and shouts words so foul I don't even recognize half of them. I sprint away, half guilty, half pleased, his promises to kick my ass in the morning echoing after me as I go.
Werner. I've joined Juliet on her morning walk today. She seems deeply nervous now, more so than ever before, and I blame myself for not better preparing her for what she might face as Supreme Commander. She came back to our room last night in a panic, said something about wishing she spoke more languages, and then refused to talk about it. I feel like she's hiding from me. Or maybe I've been hiding from her. I've been so absorbed in my own head and my own issues that I haven't had much of a chance to speak with her, at length, about how she's doing lately. Yesterday was the first time she'd ever brought up her worries about being a good leader, and it makes me wonder how long these fears have been wearing away at her, how long she's been bottling everything up. We have to find more time to talk this all through, but I worry we might both be drowning in revelations. I'm certain I am. My mind is still full of Castle's nonsense. I'm fairly certain he'll be proven misinformed, that he's misunderstood some crucial detail. Still, I'm desperate for real answers, and I haven't yet had a chance to go through my father's files. So I remain here, in this uncertain state. I've been hoping to find some time today, but I don't trust Hader and Nazira to be alone with Juliet. I gave her the space she needed when she first met Hader, but leaving her alone with them now would just be irresponsible. Our visitors are here for all the wrong reasons, and likely looking for any reason to play cruel mental Olympics with her emotions. I'd be surprised if they didn't want to terrify and confuse her, to bully her into cowardice. And I'm beginning to worry. There's so much Juliet doesn't know. I think I've not made enough of an effort to imagine how she must be feeling. I take too much for granted in this military life, and things that seem obvious to me are still brand new to her. I need to remember that. I need to tell her that she has her own armory, that she has a fleet of private cars, a personal chauffeur, several private jets and pilots at her disposal. And then I wonder suddenly whether she's ever been on a plane. I stop, suspended in thought. Of course she hasn't. She has no recollection of a life lived anywhere but in Sector 45. I doubt she's ever gone for a swim, much less sailed on a ship in the middle of the ocean. She's never lived anywhere but in books and memories. There's still so much she has to learn, so much to overcome. And while I sympathize deeply with her struggles, I really do not envy her in this. The enormity of the task ahead. After all, there's a simple reason I never wanted the job of Supreme Commander myself. I never wanted the responsibility. It's a tremendous amount of work, with far less freedom than one might expect. Worse, it's a position that requires a great deal of people skills. The kind of people skills that include both killing and charming a person at a moment's notice. Two things I detest. I tried to convince Juliet that she was perfectly capable of stepping into my father's shoes, but she doesn't seem at all persuaded. And with Hader and Nazira now here, I understand why she seems more uncertain than ever. The two of them, well, it was only Hader, really, asked to join Juliet on her morning walk to the water this morning. She and Kenji had been discussing the matter under their breaths, but Hader has sharper hearing than we suspected. So here we are, the five of us walking along the beach in an awkward silence. Hader and Juliet and I have unintentionally formed a group. Nazira and Kenji follow some paces behind. No one is speaking. Still, the beach isn't a terrible place to spend a morning, despite the strange stench arising from the water. It's actually rather peaceful. The sounds of the breaking waves make for a soothing backdrop against the otherwise already stressful day. So, Hader finally says to me, will you be attending the Continental Symposium this year? Of course, I answer quietly. I will attend as I always have. A pause. Will you be returning home to attend your own event?
Unfortunately not. Nazira and I were hoping to accompany you to the North American arm, but of course, I wasn't sure if Supreme Commander Ferrars,
he glances at Juliet,
would be making an appearance, so...
She leans in, eyes wide.
I'm sorry, what are we talking about?
Hader frowns only a little in response, but I can feel the depth of his surprise.
The Continental Symposium, he says. Surely you've heard of it.
Juliet looks at me, confused, and then...
Oh yes, of course, she says, remembering. I've gotten a bunch of letters about that. I didn't realize it was such a big deal.
I have to fight the impulse to cringe. This was another oversight on my part. Juliet and I have talked about the symposium, of course, but only briefly. It's a biannual congress of all 555 regions from across the continent. Every sector leader gathered in one place. It's a massive production. Hader tilts his head, studying her.
Yes, it's a very big deal. Our father, he says, is busy preparing for the Asia event, so it's been on my mind quite a bit lately. But as the late Supreme Anderson never attended public gatherings, I wondered whether you would be following in his footsteps.
Oh no, I'll be there,
Juliet says quickly.
I'm not hiding from the world the way he did. Of course I'll be there.
Hader's eyes widen slightly. He looks from me to her and back again.
When is it exactly?
She says, and I feel Hader's curiosity grow suddenly more intense.
You've not looked at your invitation?
He asks, all innocence.
The event is in 2 days.
She suddenly turns away, but not before I see that her cheeks are flushed. I can feel her sudden embarrassment, and it breaks my heart. I hate Hader for toying with her like this.
I've been very busy,
she says quietly.
It's my fault, I cut in. I was supposed to follow up on the matter and I forgot, but we'll be finalizing the program today. De La Lue is already hard at work arranging all the details.
Wonderful, Hader says to me.
Nazira and I look forward to joining you. We've never been to a symposium outside of Asia before.
Of course, I say. We'll be delighted to have you with us. Hader looks Juliet up and down then, examining her outfit. Her hair, her plain, worn tennis shoes, and though he says nothing, I can feel his disapproval, his skepticism, and ultimately, his disappointment in her. It makes me want to throw him in the ocean.
What are your plans for the rest of your stay here?
I ask, watching him closely now. He shrugs, perfect nonchalance.
Our plans are fluid. We're only interested in spending time with all of you.
He glances at me.
Do old friends really need a reason to see each other?
And for a moment, the briefest moment, I sense genuine pain behind his words, a feeling of neglect. It surprises me. And then it's gone.
In any case, Hader is saying, I believe Supreme Commander Ferrars has already received a number of letters from our other friends, though it seems their requests to visit were met with silence. I'm afraid they felt a bit left out when I told them Nazira and I were here.
What?
Juliet says, glancing at me before looking back at Hader.
What other friends? Do you mean the other Supreme Commanders? Because I haven't...
Oh, no, Hader says. No, no, not the other commanders. Not yet, anyway. Just us kids. We were hoping for a little reunion. We haven't gotten the whole group together in far too long.
The whole group,
Juliet says softly. Then she frowns.
How many more kids are there?
Hader's fake exuberance turns suddenly strange. Cold. He looks at me with both anger and confusion when he says,
You've told her nothing about us?
Now Juliet is staring at me. Her eyes widen perceptibly. I can feel her fear spike. And I'm still trying to figure out how to tell her not to worry when Hader clamps down on my arm, hard, and pulls me forward.
What are you doing?
He whispers,
The words urgent, violent. You turned your back on all of us for what? For this? For a child? Intakulish Gabi, he says. So very, very stupid. And I promise you, Habibi, this won't end well.
There's a warning in his eyes. I feel it then, when he suddenly lets go. When he unlocks a secret deep within his heart. And something awful settles into the pit of my stomach. A feeling of nausea. Terrible dread. And I finally understand. The commanders are sending their children to do the groundwork here, because they don't think it's worth their time to come themselves. They want their offspring to infiltrate and examine our base, to use their youth to appeal to the new, young Supreme Commander of North America, to fake camaraderie, and ultimately, to send back information. They're not interested in forging alliances. They're only here to figure out how much work it will take to destroy us. I turn away, anger threatening to undo my composure, and Hader clamps down harder on my arm. I meet his eyes. It's only my determination to keep things civil for Juliet's sake that prevents me from breaking his fingers off my body. Hurting Hader would be enough to start a world war. And he knows this.
What's happened to you? He says, still hissing in my ear. I didn't believe it when I first heard that you'd fallen in love with some idiot psychotic girl. I had more faith in you. I defended you. But this, he says, shaking his head. This is truly heartbreaking. I can't believe how much you've changed.
My fingers tense, itching to form fists, and I'm just about to respond when Juliet, who's been watching us closely from a distance, says,
Let go of him.
And there's something about the steadiness of her voice. Something about the barely restrained fury in her words that captures Hader's attention. He drops my arm, surprised, spins around.
Touch him one more time,
Juliet says quietly,
and I will rip your heart out of your body.
Hader stares at her.
Excuse me?
She steps forward. She looks suddenly terrifying. There's a fire in her eyes, a murderous stillness in her movements.
If I ever catch you putting your hands on him again, I will tear open your chest, she says, and rip out your heart.
Hader's eyebrows fly up his forehead. He blinks, hesitates, and then...
I didn't realize that was something you could do.
For you, she says. I'd do it with pleasure.
Now, Hader smiles, laughs out loud, and for the first time since he's arrived, he actually looks sincere. His eyes crinkle with delight. Would you mind, he says to her,
if I borrowed your Warner for a bit? I promise I won't put my hands on him. I'd just like to speak with him.
She looks at me then, a question in her eyes. But I can only smile at her. I want to scoop her up and carry her away, take her somewhere quiet and lose myself in her. I love that the girl who blushes so easily in my arms is the same one who would kill a man for hurting me. I won't be long, I say. And she returns my smile, her face transformed once again. It lasts only a couple of seconds, but somehow time slows down long enough for me to gather the many details of this moment and place it among my favorite memories. I'm grateful, suddenly, for this unusual, supernatural gift I have for sensing emotions. It's still my secret, known only by a few. A secret I'd managed to keep from my father and from the other commanders and their children. I like how it makes me feel separate, different from the people I've always known. But best of all, it makes it possible for me to know how deeply Juliet loves me. I can always feel the rush of emotion in her words, in her eyes, the certainty that she would fight for me, protect me,
and knowing this makes my heart feel so full that sometimes, when we're together, I can hardly breathe. I wonder if she knows that I would do anything for her.
Juliet. Oh, look, a fish! I run toward the water and Kenji catches me around the waist, hauls me back. That water is disgusting, Jay. You shouldn't get near it. What? Why? I say, still pointing. Can't you see the fish? I haven't seen a fish in the water in a really long time.
Yeah, well, it's probably dead.
What? I look again, squinting. No, I don't think...
Oh, yeah, it's definitely dead.
We both look up. It's the first thing Nazira has said all morning. She's been very quiet, watching and listening to everything with an eerie stillness. Actually, I've noticed she spends most of her time watching her brother. She doesn't seem interested in me the way Hader seems to be, and I find it confusing. I don't understand yet exactly why they're here. I know they're curious about who I am, which, honestly, I get, but there's got to be more to it than just that. And it's this unknowable part, the tension between brother and sister even, that I can't comprehend. So I wait for her to say more. She doesn't. She's still watching her brother, who's off in the distance with Warner now, the two of them discussing something we can no longer hear. It's an interesting scene, the two of them. Warner is wearing a dark, blood-red suit today, no tie and no overcoat, even though it's freezing outside. Just a black shirt underneath the blazer and a pair of black boots. He's clutching the handle of a briefcase and a pair of gloves in the same hand, and his cheeks are pink from the cold. Beside him, Hader's hair is a wild, untamed shock of blackness in the gray morning light. He's wearing slim black pants and yesterday's chain-link shirt underneath a long blue velvet coat, and doesn't seem at all bothered by the wind blowing the jacket open to reveal his heavily built, very bronzed upper body. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's intentional. The two of them walking tall and alone on the deserted beach, heavy boots leaving prints in the sand, makes for a striking image, but they're definitely overdressed for the occasion. If I were being honest, I'd be forced to admit that Hader is just as beautiful as his sister, despite his aversion to wearing shirts. But Hader seems deeply aware of how handsome he is, which somehow works against him. In any case, none of that matters. I'm only interested in the boy walking beside him. So it's Warner I'm staring at when Kenji says something that pulls me suddenly back to the present.
I think we'd better get back to base, Jay.
He checks the time on the watch he's only recently started wearing. Castle said he needs to talk to you ASAP. Again? Kenji nods.
Yeah, and I have to talk to the girls about their progress with James, remember? Castle wants a report.
By the way, I think Winston and Aaliyah are finally done fixing your suit, and they actually have a new design for you to look at when you have a chance.
I know you still have to get through the rest of your mail from today, but whenever you're done, maybe we could...
Hey, Nazira says, waving at us as she walks up.
If you guys are heading back to the base, could you do me a favor and grant me clearance to walk around the sector on my own today?
She smiles at me. I haven't been back here in over a year, and I'd like to look around a little, see what's changed. Sure, I say, and smile back. The soldiers at the front desk can take care of that. Just give them your name, and I'll have Kenji send them my pre-authorization.
Oh, yeah, actually, you know what? Why don't I just show you around myself?
Kenji beams at her.
This place changed a lot in the last year. I'd be happy to be your tour guide.
Nazira hesitates.
I thought I just heard you say you had a bunch of things to do.
What? No, he laughs. Zero things to do. I'm all yours, for whatever, you know?
Kenji. He flicks me in the back and I flinch, scowling at him.
Okay. Nazira says. Well, maybe later, if you have time.
I've got time now, he says, and he's grinning at her like an idiot. Like an actual idiot. I don't know how to save him from himself. Should we get going? He says. We can start here. I can show you around the compounds first, if you like. Or, I mean, we can start in unregulated territory, too. He shrugs. Whatever you prefer, just let me know.
Nazira looks suddenly fascinated. She's staring at Kenji like she might chop him up and put him in a stew.
"Aren't you a member of the Supreme Guard?" she says. "Shouldn't you stay with your commander until she's safely back to base?"
Oh, yeah. No, she'll be fine, he says in a rush. "Plus, we've got these dudes." He waves at the 6 soldiers shadowing us. "Watching her all the time, so she'll be safe."
I pinch him hard in the side of his stomach. Kenji gasps, spins around.
"We're only like 5 minutes from base," he says. "You'll be okay getting back by yourself, won't you?"
I glare at him. "Of course I can get back by myself," I shout whisper. "That's not why I'm mad. I'm mad because you have a million things to do and you're acting like an idiot in front of a girl who is obviously not interested in you." Kenji steps back, looking injured.
"Why are you trying to hurt me, Jay? Where's your vote of confidence? Where's the love and support I require at this difficult hour? I need you to be my wing woman."
"You do know that I can hear you, right?"
Nazira tilts her head to one side, her arms crossed loosely against her chest.
"I'm standing right here."
She looks somehow even more stunning today, her hair wrapped up in silks that look like liquid gold in the light. She's wearing an intricately braided red sweater, a pair of black textured leather leggings, and black boots with steel platforms. And she's still got those heavy gold knuckles on both her fists. I wish I could ask her where she gets her clothes. I only realize Kenji and I have both been staring at her for too long when she finally clears her throat. She drops her arms and steps cautiously forward, smiling, not unkindly, at Kenji, who seems suddenly unable to breathe.
"Listen," she says softly. "You're cute. Really cute. You've got a great face, but this," she says, gesturing between them, "is not happening."
Kenji doesn't appear to have heard her.
"You think I got a great face?"
She laughs and frowns at the same time, waves 2 fingers and says, "Bye." And that's it. She walks away. Kenji says nothing. His eyes are fixed on Nazira's disappearing form in the distance. I pat his arm, try to sound sympathetic. "It'll be okay," I say. "Rejection is hard."
"That was amazing."
What? He turns to look at me.
"I mean, I've always known I had a great face, but now I know, like, for sure that I've got a great face. And it's just so validating."
"You know, I don't think I like this side of you."
"Aw, don't be like that, Jay." Kenji taps me on the nose. "Don't be jealous. I'm not I deserve to be happy too, don't I?"
And he goes suddenly quiet. His smile slips, his laugh dies away, and Kenji looks, if only for a moment, sad.
"Maybe one day."
I feel my heart seize. "Hey," I say gently, "you deserve to be the happiest." Kenji runs a hand through his hair and sighs.
"Yeah, well."
"Her loss," I say. He glances at me.
"I guess that was pretty decent as far as rejections go."
"She just doesn't know you," I say. "You're a total catch."
"I know, right? I keep trying to tell people."
"People are dumb," I shrug. "I think you're wonderful."
"Wonderful, huh?"
"Yep," I say, and link my arm in his. "You're smart and funny and kind and..."
"Handsome," he says. "Don't forget handsome."
"And very handsome," I say, nodding.
"Yeah, I'm flattered, Jay, but I don't like you like that."
My mouth drops open.
"How many times do I have to ask you to stop falling in love with me?"
"Hey," I say, shoving away from him. "You're terrible."
"I thought I was wonderful."
"Depends on the hour." And he laughs out loud.
"All right, kid. You ready to head back?"
I sigh, look off into the distance. "I don't know. I think I need a little more time alone. I still got a lot on my mind. A lot I need to sort through."
"I get it,"
he says, shooting me a sympathetic look.
"Do your thing."
"Thanks."
"Do you mind if I get going, though? All jokes aside, I really do have a lot to take care of today."
"I'll be fine. You go."
"You sure? You'll be okay out here on your own?"
"Yes, yes," I say, and shove him forward. "I'll be more than okay. I'm never really on my own, anyway." I gesture with my head toward the soldiers. These guys are always following me. Kenji nods, gives me a quick squeeze on the arm, and jogs off. Within seconds, I'm alone. I sigh and turn toward the water, kicking at the sand as I do. I'm so confused. I'm caught between different worries, trapped by a fear of what seems my inevitable failure as a leader and my fears of Warner's inscrutable past. And today's conversation with Hader didn't help with the latter. His unmasked shock that Warner hadn't even bothered to mention the other families and the children he grew up with really blew me away. It made me wonder how much more I don't know, how much more there is to unearth. I know exactly how I feel when I look into his eyes, but sometimes being with Warner gives me whiplash. He's so unused to communicating basic things to anyone that every day with him comes with new discoveries. The discoveries aren't all bad, in fact. Most of the things I learn about him only make me love him more. But even the harmless revelations are occasionally confusing. Last week, I found him sitting in his office listening to old vinyl records. I'd seen his record collection before. He has a huge stack that was apportioned to him by the reestablishment, along with a selection of old books and artwork. He was supposed to be sorting through it all, deciding what to keep and what to destroy, but I'd never seen him just sit and listen to music. He didn't notice me when I'd walked in that day. He was sitting very still, looking only at the wall and listening to what I later discovered was a Bob Dylan record. I know this because I peeked in his office many hours later after he'd left. I couldn't shake my curiosity. Warner had only listened to one of the songs on the record. He'd reset the needle every time the song finished, and I wanted to know what it was. It turned out to be a song called Like a Rolling Stone. I still haven't told him what I saw that day. I wanted to see if he would share the story with me himself, but he never mentioned it, not even when I asked him what he did that afternoon. It wasn't a lie, exactly, but the omission made me wonder why he'd keep it from me. There's a part of me that wants to rip his history open. I want to know the good and the bad and just get all the secrets out and be done with it. Because right now I feel certain that my imagination is much more dangerous than any of his truths. But I'm not sure how to make that happen. Besides, everything is moving so quickly now. We're all so busy all the time and it's hard enough to keep my own thoughts straight. I'm not even sure where our resistance is headed at the moment. Everything is worrying me. Castle's worries are worrying me. Warner's mysteries are worrying me. The children of the Supreme Commanders are worrying me. I take in a deep breath and exhale, long and loud. I'm staring out across the water, trying to clear my mind by focusing on the fluid motions of the ocean. It was just 3 weeks ago that I'd felt stronger than I ever had in my whole life. I'd finally learned how to make use of my powers. I'd learned how to moderate my strength, how to project, and most important, how to turn my abilities on and off. And then I'd crushed Anderson's legs in my bare hands. I stood still while soldiers emptied countless rounds of lead into my body. I was invincible. But now, this new job is more than I bargained for. Politics, it turns out, is a science I don't yet understand. Killing things, breaking things, destroying things, that I understand. Getting angry and going to war, I understand. But patiently playing a confusing game of chess with a bunch of strangers from around the world? God, I'd so much rather shoot someone. I'm making my way back to base slowly, my shoes filling with sand as I go. I'm actively dreading whatever it is Castle wants to talk to me about, but I've been gone for too long already. There's too much to do, and there's no way out of this but through. I have to face it, deal with it, whatever it is. I sigh as I flex and unflex my fists, feeling the power come in and out of my body. It's still a strange thrill for me to be able to disarm myself at will. It's nice to be able to walk around most days with my powers turned off. It's nice to be able to accidentally touch Kenji's skin without worrying I'll hurt him. I scoop up two handfuls of sand, powers on. I close my fist, and the sand is pulverized to dust. Powers off. The sand leaves a vague, pockmarked impression on my skin. I drop the sand, dusting off the remaining grains from my palms, and squint into the morning sun. I'm searching for the soldiers who've been following me this whole time. Because suddenly, I can't spot them. Which is strange, because I just saw them a minute ago. And then I feel it. Pain. It explodes in my back. It's a sharp, searing, violent pain, and I'm blinded by it in an instant. I spin around in a fury that immediately dulls, my senses dimming even as I attempt to harness them. I pull up my energy, thrumming suddenly with electricum, and wonder at my own stupidity for forgetting to turn my powers back on, especially out in the open like this. I was too distracted, too frustrated. I can feel the bullet in my shoulder blade incapacitating me now, but I fight through the agony to try and spot my attacker. Still, I'm too slow. Another bullet hits my thigh, but this time I feel it leave only a flesh wound, bouncing off before it can make much of a mark. My energy is weak, and weakening by the minute. I think because of the blood I'm losing, and I'm frustrated, so frustrated by how quickly I've been overtaken. Stupid, stupid, stupid. I trip as I try to hurry on the sand. I'm still an open target here. My assailant could be anyone, could be anywhere. And I'm not even sure where to look when suddenly three more bullets hit me in my stomach, my wrist, my chest. The bullets break off my body and still manage to draw blood, but the bullet buried in my back, is sending blinding flashes of pain through my veins, and I gasp, my mouth frozen open, and I can't catch my breath, and the torment is so intense I can't help but wonder if this is a special gun, if these are special bullets. Oh... The small, breathless sound leaves my body as my knees hit the sand, and I'm now pretty sure, fairly certain, these bullets have been laced with poison. Which would mean that even these flesh wounds would be danger. I fall, head spinning, backward onto the sand, too dizzy to see straight. My lips feel numb, my bones loose, and my blood all sloshing together fast and weird, and I start laughing, thinking I see a bird in the sky. Not just one, but many of them all at once, flying, flying, flying. Suddenly, I can't breathe. Someone has their arm around my neck. They're dragging me backward, and I'm choking, spitting up and losing lungs, and I can't feel my tongue, and I'm kicking at the sand so hard I've lost my shoes, and I think, here it is, death again. So soon, I was too tired anyway. And then the pressure is gone. So swiftly. I'm gasping and coughing, and there's sand in my hair and in my teeth, and I'm seeing colors and birds, so many birds, and I'm spinning, and crack. Something breaks, and it sounds like bone. My eyesight sharpens for an instant, and I manage to see something in front of me. Someone. I squint, feeling like my mouth might swallow itself, and I think it must be the poison, but it's not. It's Nazira. So pretty. So pretty, standing in front of me, her hands around a man's limp neck, and then she drops him to the ground. Scoops me up. You're so strong and so pretty, I mumble. So strong, and I want to be like you, I say to her. And she says, shh, and tells me to be still, tells me I'll be fine, and carries me away.
Warner. Panic, terror, guilt, unbounded fears. I can hardly feel my feet as they hit the ground, my heart beating so hard it physically hurts. I'm bolting toward our half-built medical wing on the 15th floor and trying not to drown in the darkness of my own thoughts. I have to fight an instinct to squeeze my eyes shut as I run, taking the emergency stairs two at a time because, of course, the nearest elevator is temporarily closed for repairs. I've never been such a fool. What was I thinking? What was I thinking? I simply walked away. I keep making mistakes. I keep making assumptions. And I've never been so desperate for Kishimoto's inelegant vocabulary. God, the things I wish I could say. The things I'd like to shout. I've never been so angry with myself. I was so sure she'd be fine. I was so sure she knew to never move out in the open, unprotected. A sudden rush of dread overwhelms me. I will it away. I will it away even as my chest heaves with exhaustion and outrage. It's irrational to be mad at agony. It's futile, I know, to be angry with this pain. And yet, here I am.